as I get closer to where he went off the road, I see a big black shape in the middle of the road walking. So I have to slam on my brakes and try to swerve myself because this thing is walking in the center of the road. Because I don't see a head and I don't see arms. I just see a really big, tall person, like big, thick legs and a big, thick torso. And they're moving very funny.
But to be honest, I wish I had have seen some of her vulnerability. I wish I'd have seen her in that space so that I would have language.
And he says, no. That's not why you're angry. That's why you're mad. Mad is on the surface. Mad is a surface emotion. You're angry. And anger is deep. That cuts to your soul. You are an angry young man. And I couldn't answer. I then had come to realize over the next course of a few hours, I'm musing to myself, and I realize I've been a victim my whole life. That's why I'm so angry. And over the course of the next 19 months, this man changed my life. He helped me to realize about processing emotion and how to forgive myself and forgive others. And that's where the metamorphosis really began for me. And I learned how to, I'm a survivor, right? I know how to survive.
I was understood for the first time in my entire life. And when I read those things and I learned, quote unquote, those things about myself that I had known forever, but never really had the semantics for, I couldn't unlearn them. Like I heard this quote years ago and it resonated with me so much. And it's like, you can choose to look the other way, but you can never again say you didn't know.
Hey friends, happy April. I can't believe it's almost time for the eclipse. So hopefully some of my listeners will be able to see it. I will not, but I'm sure there'll be a lot of really cool pictures floating around. I just want to say thanks to all my guests for sharing and rating the show and helping us grow, and being patient for all the new artwork uploads that I'm doing for all the episodes, and getting all the episodes out on YouTube slowly. It's a slow process. Some of those files are pretty big, so it takes a little while to get them onto YouTube, but hopefully I'll have that done over the next week. I want to do a fun shout out to one of my former guests, Belinda Warburton. I just had an episode with her as a guest. It was super fun. And her new upcoming podcast is called The Naked Coach Collective. I want everyone to jump on over there and find it and give it a listen and a thumbs up. Show her some love. And then I'll, provide a link somewhere when my episode gets uploaded. But in that episode, I referenced and also provided as a free gift a 21-day jumpstart habit tracker. If you'd like to get that, it's totally free. Either go to my website or there's a link on Linktree and you can get that as a free download. Today, I want to welcome Jorge Gonzalez. He's from Ventura County, California. He's a realtor with a mini course out. He's an author with a new book. He's also an inventor of a batting pro. It's a softball and baseball aid for kids. He has a podcast out called Answer the Call. He's also a thriver after a disability that threw a curveball in his life. This episode dives into his story about his family's experience of immigration to the United States. So I'm going to let him kick it off and tell us all about it. Thanks and welcome, Jorge.
Thank you so much for having me, Monica. Super excited to be here today.
Yeah. So we were talking a little bit before we started, and I think the story starts with your grandfather and how he came from Mexico as an agricultural worker in World War II. So I'm interested in the story and I was wondering if you could share that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that story that you just mentioned, it was a story that really humbled me and made me emotional when I first heard about it. My grandfather decided to migrate to the United States from Mexico during World War II under a work agreement between the United States and Mexico called the Bracero Program. And my grandfather, he had married my grandmother. He had a small child, 1 year old, and an infant child. I think it was like a couple of months old only. And that's when he made a decision to come over here. When I first heard about that, it almost broke my heart that my grandfather would have to make that kind of decision to be able to come here to the United States, work, and send money back home. And so everything that I'm trying to create, I want to honor his legacy and his sacrifice, not only his sacrifice, but also my grandma's sacrifice, because they both did it together. So I want to make sure that that's like the foundation of everything that I built.
Yeah. So he's been your inspiration.
Yeah, he's definitely been the seed that was planted with inspiration. That was my original seed. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So what brought him, or what have you heard from your family about what brought him to, he came to California, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. So what do you know about the Bracero program, and how did he get involved in it? I mean, how did he hear about it?
The Bracero program was created because the Americans were fighting in World War II, and there was a huge lack of labor. And the United States thought it was a great idea to reach over to its neighbors and ask them for help. And this is also the same time where the females also started working in the warehousing and whatnot. That's when that whole movement started as well. So it was the Mexican people coming over to work in the agriculture fields, and the women started working the factories back in those days. You know, so you had these two things that were going at the same time. But my grandfather, by somewhere in coincidence, he went to this part of town, and he saw this notification that this is what was going on, you know. And because my grandfather, he was an orphan, his parents died really young, and he knew how difficult it was to survive and to make it. And having a family that he had just started, he knew that this would be an opportunity to make sure that his family wouldn't suffer a similar way like he suffered as a child. And that's where he made that decision to come over here. So it wasn't easy. It was extremely difficult, I'm sure.
So it was partly financially based as a work opportunity.
Yes, it was definitely financially based. And he knew, like I said, that he didn't want his family to go through the same struggles and sacrifices that he had to go through as a child.
Yeah, and it sounds like they brought the women over possibly to work in the factories during wartime efforts for maybe
no,
it was
no, the, no, the women part of, I mean, the American women, that was that movement of the American women when they went into work.
Oh, right.
That was back in that same era.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which was kind of the springboard for women kind of, you know, still managing the home, but also
yes,
as contributing because we needed more yes, workers.
So there was a huge sacrifice on both sides, on the U.S. side, on the female, the men fighting in war, the females having to go to work and having to play those two roles, the family and that work. And these, I'm sure they were long hours because we were at war. And then that's why the Mexican people also came over here to help them in the agriculture fields, because that's where that program started at.
Right. Did any of your family end up serving?
No, not that generation, no. But after that, like my generation, I have cousins and whatnot that they did serve. I was going to go into the army, but I saw the look in my mom's eyes, and she was just devastated to think that I would serve when I was of age. And then I also have nephews of mine that actually did serve as well. So the generation my grandfather didn't, my parents' generation didn't, but my generation and then my next generation, that we have served in the military.
Oh, good. Yeah. That's really, it's such an honor. I have a lot of military family on my side, and both mother and my father's side. And yeah, it's a really neat thing to be able to do that, to serve your country. And I always have the greatest respect for people who take time out of their lives when they're young to do that. Scary, I'm sure, for all the family who can't, mm-hmm. but yeah, that's great. So they came here to work, got to work, became settled. And then, of course, you came along. And how did you get started? I think you started with an invention first, right? Or was there a backstory to that? Like, how did you get to this part?
So because I was so inspired by my grandfather, what he did for me. So I, like I said, when I first heard about that, I wanted to make sure that my life had meaning and that I would take every opportunity and see as an opportunity and just go for it, regardless of what it was. So I was able to move up the ranks in warehouse distribution and logistics in management. And I did that for 20 plus years. And then I got injured. And when I got injured, that's when, actually, no, I didn't get injured first. I was unemployed during the market crash that we had in 2008. And my daughter wanted to play softball. And when she wanted to play softball, I ended up being her assistant coach for her team, because there wasn't going to be a team. I convinced another parent to be the coach. I was the assistant. And out of that frustration of her playing and me wanting to be an amazing player, I went to sleep one day. I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning and I had like this image in my mind and I sketched it. I went back to sleep. I woke up the next morning and the sketch was like right there. I'm like, oh my God, this wasn't a dream. This actually did happen. And then I took my daughter to school. I picked her up and I was in my home office. And my daughter said, Daddy, what are you doing? It's like, look, I invented this machine. It's like, well, what's it for? It's like, baby, to help you on your batting so you can become this great player. And then she's like, well, Daddy, shouldn't it have this? Shouldn't it do this? And why isn't it able to do this? So I resketched it and my daughter became a co-inventor of she was almost 12 years old. And I built a prototype for her and she became a 5-time All-Star, 1-year Rookie of the Year, and 1-year MVP because of this batting machine. So at first, nobody wanted her. And then when they saw her skills and how she was getting, I was like, wait a minute. Everybody wanted her on their team now because I did such a great job bringing her up to become this amazing player. Of course, she did it too because she really wanted her, but I put in front of her the things that she needed for her to make that happen.
That's so awesome. I love that story. I mean, and sports is such a great way to help kids. But so she basically just kind of helped you design this thing. She's like, oh, that's great, Dad. This is a great design, but
yes. So I created it. I created it. She redesigned it and says, Dad, if it's going to function, it needs to do this.
Right.
And I just, and the thing is that the way I raised her, I want to make sure that she's smarter than me and wiser than me. So whenever she gives an input, she supersedes my decisions every time. Because I raised her that way.
Yeah. That's all any of us can hope. Our kids are definitely smarter than us.
Absolutely. 100%.
For sure.
Yeah.
All the time. It's kind of funny. But that's okay. Well, that's so cool. So how do you sell this? Did you sell the design of it or did you produce it?
Yeah. So what happened was that because of that time, I had limited resources because I was unemployed. And then I went back to work. And when I went back to work, that's when I had the accident when I was 39, and that disabled me for 3.5 years. So talk about being unemployed for 3 years. I come up with this amazing idea. I go back to work to make this dream a reality because my daughter was already killing it in the field, right? So then I was disabled for 3.5 years. All my resources were gone. I got divorced. I lost everything that I had. And then, but then I was like, wait a minute, I'm going to launch this. But then Trump came onto office and then we went into a tariff war with aluminum and steel in China. I wanted it so bad. I had my production run ready to go. But I'm like, wait a minute. If I pull the trigger now and this tariff war takes everything from me, this is not an option for me. So I pulled back. I didn't order that run. But then COVID hit and then the whole world shut down. And now we're in a recession. So, but now it's like, I'm on podcasts. I got people reaching out to me because it's all over my social media platforms now. It's on my website everywhere. And I got people asking me, George, can I get one? So we're doing, you know, special orders, onesies and twosies to put this in the hands of people, you know, and I'm using my book and I'm using the podcasting, the stages and stuff like that. Everything where I'm speaking at as a platform to educate people of not only the journey and the message of answer the call, but also the batting machine, because the way this machine increased my daughter's confidence in self-esteem is beyond anything that I would ever imagine for my daughter. It was just amazing, the person that she became on that field. And I wanted to be able to give that to other kids, and I wanted other parents to experience that from their children.
So this little side hustle that you had going became a really key factor in a lot for your family.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It changed my life. It changed my daughter's life. It changed the connection that we had. That bond made it even more unbreakable. And I mean, she's the co-inventor of my batting machine. I mean, how amazing is that? I mean, a parent always wants to build a legacy. Imagine your child being part of that creation of that legacy at the same time. That's the part that just blows my mind.
That's so cool. Yeah. So you're out and you're doing some public speaking. How does this tie in with your real estate career?
So when I got injured when I was 39, I herniated 3 discs, one in my lower spine, one in my mid spine, one in my neck. I was out for like 3.5 years. I couldn't even lift a gallon of milk. I was heavily medicated for about a year and a half, 2 years. I fell into a depression. I had suicidal thoughts. Like I said, I lost everything that I had. I no longer live with my daughter, which it was, again, that was like a major blow for me because the relationship that me and my daughter had. And then when I decided to get off the medication and I was able to think straight, I was able to hear this whisper. And this whisper said, real estate. And I was like, real estate, okay. Well, I've been doing kitchen and bathroom models and rehabs and flips with my dad and my uncle since I was 14 years old. So I understand that. I bought my first property at 21, my second property at 25, my third at 27. I bought a 9-plex before the market crashed. So I understood real estate. And that's when I made a decision to become a real estate agent because that was the only thing I can do because I couldn't go back in the field that I was in for 20 years because I couldn't even lift 5 pounds, you know, and I needed the flexibility that my body needed now. And that's how I got into the real estate industry in 2015.
Oh, nice. And so you became sort of a mentor to other realtors.
Because the foundation that I had of real estate, I was able to utilize for my clients. And I actually closed 12 deals my first 16 months as a new real estate agent. When I closed my first deal, people were asking me, wait a minute, didn't you just get your license like a month ago? I was like, yeah, but you just closed your first deal. I was like, yeah. It usually takes about 8 to 9 months to really close a deal because this is a new industry that we're coming in. It's like, well, yeah, but I talk about my real estate experience, my relatable experience, rehabbing, flipping, and stuff like that. That's what I talk about. And it was unusual for them. So then I started coaching some people and I helped some people actually become rookies of the year. I helped them close properties. I helped them see real estate different because a lot of people actually bring to the new career relatable experience. Some bring leadership skills. Some bring numbers like accounting and stuff like that. And those kind of numbers, some people bring landscaping, some interior design. These are all relatable experiences that involve real estate. So I tell people, stop saying you're new because you're not new. You're bringing all this value. Start talking about that. If you're a tax preparer, talk about the importance of having a real estate in your portfolio and how that lowers your taxable income. If you're interior design, talk about how beautiful you can make this property look even more expensive. So these are the things that wait a minute, I never thought about that way. This is the way you should be doing your business. And when I did that, people started seeing it differently and they started making deals because of that.
That's really interesting. Never thought about that. You know, like all of us have, like, I'm just thinking about a friend of mine that just became a realtor and, you know, she's got like a whole lifetime of background of something totally different, but it would be interesting to see like how this person could like incorporate all of this. It's really interesting. So on that note, you're doing a mini course for as part of your mentorship. So can you talk about that?
Yeah. So the mini course goes into the things that I did when I came into real estate and the foundation that I utilize, the relatable experiences, getting a coach, getting a mentor, and really focusing on certain things. How do, when you reach out to clients, what do you say? And how do you reach out? When do you reach out? These are all important things. Like, it's all about relationships. People used to tell me, George, this is business, not personal. No, no. To me, everything is personal because people need to know me. They're going to do business with me. They're not going to do business with my brokerage. They're not going to do business with me just because I'm a real estate agent. They have to get to know me at a personal level because they have to be able to trust me. So I talk about my experience. I talk about my journey. I talk about the bad things that this is when I got involved with real estate at 14. I bought my first property at 21. And then when I bought the second ones, And then I lost everything when I got divorced in the market. I don't hide anything. I'm truthful to them because I want them to know that they can trust me with anything that they want to talk to me about. And that's when I was able to do the things that I did because I came in authentic and as honest as I possibly could.
I think that's really important that you mentioned that because I think trust is, it's kind of like a mechanic. You want to trust your mechanic. You also want to trust your realtor. You want to know that they're a real person. I think there's this myth of realtors. They drive fancy cars and they have all this stuff and they try to pretend that there's something that they're not so they can get really high-end clients. But I also think that there's some value in being genuine and saying, hey, I'm a real person. You know, like I don't drive the newest car. I don't have this big fancy house. Like I'm a real person. And I think that that's really cool that you started with these flips and you'd kind of just built your knowledge base just through mm-hmm. life experience and like the remodels and stuff. There's a lot of people out there that this is such a great, interesting conversation for my theme for this month, for this season, which is like side hustles and expanding your financial and your career opportunities. And I think this is a really valuable thing to get out there because, you know, it could really affect people in a really positive way if they were interested in doing something like this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the number one way to really become very successful, wealthy, or whatnot, and grow your money is still real estate. And when I talk to people, I go, look, when I first take a client, they tell me, George, I want a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house. Okay, great. I got you. Then I'll show them, the first thing I'll show them an ugly house. And then they tell me, George, what is this? This is a dump. I go, look, you need to look beyond what you see. I'm standing in front of the house and I tell them, look, what do you see? Well, the house is ugly. Yeah, but look at the roof. What do you see? Well, it's got shingles. Well, it's got a newer roof. Look at the windows. It's got newer windows. Look at the stucco around it. All it needs is a paint job. But that means that the outer shell is protecting the inner part of the house, the outer shell. So as soon as we walk into the door right now, I'm going to show you what it's protecting or not protecting. And then we walk in and I show them exactly the same thing. I look at the floor. I look at the walls. I look at the ceilings, see if it has cottage cheese or what we call popcorn. I look at cabinets and whatnot. And then I point out certain things that people don't usually point out to them. Everything is cosmetic. I'm more concerned about the outside than I am about the inside. If a property is built after, if the house is built before the 1990s, which in the 80s and 70s, all those houses are built of redwood. Anything after the 90s is really compressed wood. So your biggest bang for your buck is buying an older house that you can transform it into something amazing. The rooms are bigger, the yards are bigger, the land is more, right? So there's a lot more single-story homes because a lot of us are aging, bad knees, bad hips, bad everything now. We don't want to go upstairs. So I allow them to see something different. And then I tell them, look, based on my experience from what I've done, it's going to cost you this much to rehab the property. Like, really, that's it? It's like, yeah, that's it. It's all cosmetic. You don't have to replace the cabinets. You can sand them down or resurface them because that's actually real wood behind those cabinets. Now, if there's water damage back there and we got to remove some, that's different. But everything on top, it's all solid wood. Why would you get rid of it? To buy wood that's not wood?
That's and really that's, great.
That's when they see it differently.
I love everything you're saying. Yeah. I love old houses. as far as like the rehab, are there any shows out there that you could mention that, because you know that they have all those shows all over Netflix and mm-hmm. Hulu and Amazon and all that, you know, like the remodel, fix and flip yeah. shows. Are there any that you like?
You know, there's a lot of good things about all those shows, but the reality of the quickness is not real. That's really delusional for people to think, oh, I'm going to do it this quick. And also to think that because they find things behind the walls that they don't share with you in these shows, because it'll take too much time to really explain it and it'll scare a lot of people. So they kind of cut these things and they really, you know, show it like quicker, more beautiful. This is what it looked like. This is what this is the end. But the reality is when you do open the walls and the drywall, there is stuff behind those walls. Not all the time, but worst case scenarios. I always plan for worst case scenarios. I always plan, look, we're going to open up this drywall. We're going to move these cabinets. And this is going to be infested back there. And we're going to remove all these studs. That's worst case scenario. But if we plan for it, and that's not the case, that's more money in your pocket, is what I always tell my clients. And it's so far, it's worked out perfectly for me and my clients, because I've helped them save a lot of money. I helped them buy a property that they thought they weren't going to buy in an area that they wanted to buy, but they think they couldn't afford, because you want to buy the worst house in the best location, not the best house in the worst location. In that sense, I was able to help them in that area as well.
Yeah, it sounds like you're really doing the thing. you really know what you're doing.
I'm passionate about real estate. When I'm on stage talking to these kids at college universities, they're always asking about real estate. And once they get into it, they can't stop me.
Oh, yeah. It is a fascinating subject. Yeah. Are there parts of the country? So I know that you're on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And are there other parts of the country that you see as good investment opportunities that might be starting to boom?
Look, what we're seeing and we're going to always see is people are going to migrate from highly populated areas to less populated areas. And once the certain states start to increase taxes and whatnot, people get upset, the cost of living increases, so they have to move to more affordable areas. And hopefully they're able to find work, but always look at the areas where, oh my God, this area is so beautiful, something's gonna happen here. And you wanna be in front of that wave. And you can go to like your local cities and stuff like that, and you can actually see the plans that are coming in your cities. Like if there's like a huge shopping mall or a huge chain like Walmart pops up, you know something's coming. Because I saw that in my city. When a Walmart came, like everything grew around it. When a Target came, everything grew around it. So when these big major chains opened up, like everything exploded within 5 to 10 years after that.
Has COVID changed anything? I know that I saw like down in Texas, people were just bidding, like the bidding wars I saw were happening. Colorado went a little crazy where I live. Now it's starting. It seems like it's starting to stabilize, but I'm not an expert, so I don't really know. Did you see trends that happened after COVID or during COVID?
Oh yeah. So basically the previous decade before COVID, after the 2008 crash, there was only like 6.5 million homes built in that entire decade after the 2008 crash. But previous to that, there was 26 million homes nationwide built. So after the crash, they didn't build 20 million homes. And right before COVID, we were already like a couple of years in to the next decade. So there's a huge amount of homes that were never built. That's when COVID hit, it escalated the problem that was already coming. And the reason that happened was that a lot of people wanted to remove themselves from the big cities and isolate in smaller areas. But that pushed those property values up with it. So now that we're seeing is that we've all heard that Warren Buffett has invested heavily into the major builders because he sees the future. He sees that there's a huge lack of housing. This is why he invested in it now for the future. So that's an indication that we still have a huge amount of missing inventory. And that's probably going to take about another 5 to 7 years to really get us where we need to be at. So there's a lot of opportunities for people until that really stabilizes. And then we'll have the growth that we always had over the years, because it's always growing. But during COVID, it just went straight up vertical. That we didn't see for a very, very long time.
Yeah, it became sort of unstable, very unstable, it seems like.
Oh, yeah. Multiple offers everywhere. 20, 30 multiple offers. Mm-hmm. Sold in 24 hours. It was just crazy during COVID.
Yeah, that's crazy. And it's scary as a buyer too. That's really not the best way to buy a home.
No, a lot of my buyers were pushed out of the market, because where I live at, there's a lot of agricultural fields, a lot of people in the service industry, and they were pushed out of the market. And then the rates went up after that. So there's still like, George, what do? I really want to buy. Yeah, but they don't have the capital because now they need bigger down payments. The mortgages are a lot higher. They should have bought when I came in at 2015, when I was yelling at people, buy, 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 buy. Everything is so cheap. Everything's so cheap. A lot of people didn't believe me. A lot of people didn't believe me.
There was a tendency to procrastinate. We all kind of have that.
We all want what we can't have. And this is exactly what happened now.
So what do you think is going to happen in 2024?
I think 2024 is going to be a year that people are not expecting. You know, the elections are coming. And I think because of the elections, they always want to beautify things, ease the pain of things, until then we forget about it. And then everything goes back to the same place. And not to get political here, because that's not my intent. But I think things are going to change. They have to, because a lot of people are priced out. And there's a lot of people that want to buy that they can't. And I heard, I don't know if this is true or not, but I saw this article that said that they want to not allow institutions to invest in single family homes. I don't know if there's any truth to that or not, but if that happens, that can help ease the pain of the single family homes and the first time home buyers. That'll ease it. I don't know if that article is too far-fetched and too out there. I don't know. But that's something worth taking a look at, because there is no starter homes anymore. A two-bedroom condo, they're not building those anymore. They're only building three bedrooms and four bedrooms. So a college student that graduates from a university has to buy a three or four bedroom when they come out, new career. Some of them are not even married yet, and you want them to buy a three to four bedroom house? They should be buying a two-bedroom condo as a starter home. So where are all the starter homes at? That's what's missing in the marketplace.
They're all older.
Yeah.
And you have to wait for someone to release it onto the market. So this is really, we could talk for hours about this. I love talking about real estate. But so you've got, you're doing some public speaking. You've got this mini course for realtors. Mm-hmm. And you just released a book. Go ahead and tell me. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm getting this wrong. Answer the Call?
Yes.
Life Lessons from Family Origins. So tell us about that.
So during the pandemic, I knew that we were going to exposed as the people that either tap out or we're going to go all in on something, our dreams or inspirations. And I was one of those people that I was called to write my book during the pandemic in 2021. This hug came over me and told me, it's time to write the book. And I was like, wait a minute, the whole world is shut down. This doesn't make any sense. What do you mean? And then it hugged me again. And it gave me the peace and said, it's time to write it. So I was obedient to that calling of me writing my book. So we started working on the project. We started doing the book, getting it together. And when I was finalizing the title of my book, I was on the phone with my publishing company. And then I heard this whisper, answer the call. And then I heard it a second time, answer the call. And then I said it out loud, answer the call. And my publishing company that was on, I was on the phone with them, George, what is that? That's the name of the book. Where did you get that from? It was just whispered to me. Okay, perfect. We're scrapping American Inventor and we're going with Answer the Call. That's the name of the book. Because I was going to call it American Inventor, but American Inventor is more for self. And Answer the Call, a couple weeks later, came to me that Answer the Call is about finding your gifts, your talents, and pursuing your life's purpose. And we're all being called to answer the calling on our life.
That's great. I like how your intuition just pops in and gives you these nuggets.
But I got to say that I've been guilty of discarding it and ignoring it. But every time I did that, life punched me in the gut. So when I recognized that, I was like, wait a minute. If something flows to me, I need to at least consider it and see if it's an option. And then how am I feeling? And that's what I decided to do. So now every time something happens, I'm like, okay, I'm listening. Is this something that I'm supposed to do? I'm waiting on your direction. So I want to make sure that I'm obedient to that. So I don't want life to hit me no more. I've already gone through that. I want to be obedient now and do what I'm being called to do now.
Those messages that come in, those are really special. Yes. I think a lot of us don't listen to those. And we really should. If we listened to the intuition that comes to us, then we might all be doing just a little bit better.
They're life-changing. Yeah,
they are.
Absolutely life-changing.
Sometimes we don't want to listen to the message. Sometimes we don't like the message.
Well, scary. Change is scary. That's what we hold on to. It's too scary to do that. But the way it changes your life, you're like, I'm really glad I did that. I'm really, really glad I did that. Because now being on stage, being on podcasts, I'm meeting such amazing people and I'm sharing stories that I've always wanted to share. Now I'm getting that opportunity because I was obedient to that calling. Had I not done that, had I not done the book, I never would have been a podcast. I never been one of stages. I wouldn't be able to share these lessons in my life and these stories that are so emotional to me and so important to me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So give us the lowdown on how people can get in touch with you, find you, find your book, find your course, and find out about the batting machine that you invented.
You can find me in all my social media platforms under my name, George or Jorge underscore V underscore Gonzalez. And if you go to my bio, all my stuff is there. And I offer all the audience when I'm speaking or on stages or on a podcast, there's an option. There's three options to get my book. One is a free Kindle version. One is an online version. And one is a paperback version. And I'm always promoting the free version because it's not, I'm not going to get rich off my books. I'm not, and that's not my intent. My thing is I want to share the message of Answer the Call and the stories of reinvention, the journey, how to overcome adversity. That's what's important to me. And under that same bio, you'll find the mini course. You'll find further information on the batting machine. In any projects that I'm working on, you'll see those going forward underneath my bio. And I'm just here, like I said, to be obedient and really help motivate and inspire people that are looking to reinvent themselves, because we have so much relatable experience that we can bring from our previous life, from our previous careers, and put it in front of us to a new path forward. It's not going to be easy, and it might be a little scary, but I can assure you it'll be worth it and you will be fulfilled.
Thank you for sharing that. I hope everyone can go check out all of his content, grab the free download book or pay for it. check out your course, check out all of your socials. We'll have everything listed below the podcast and have direct links for all that. I want to thank you, George, for coming on. This conversation has been really interesting, and I hope everyone gets a lot out of it.
Thank you so much for having me. I am really humbled for the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Hey, thanks for listening today to another great episode. I sure enjoy hearing about these experiences, and I hope you do also. Be sure and like or follow this show by leaving a 5-star review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. If you have an experience or story you'd like to share, be sure and reach out to verbalecho@gmail.com. See you in the next episode, friends. Have a great week.